O God, give us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, courage to change the things that we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. In the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Amen. What do we do in the meantime? That's one of the most basic questions of our faith, and the vast majority of our conflicts arise from different responses to that question. The Lord who created all that is, took on flesh and dwelt among us, taught us his way of love, died for the sin of the world, rose again on the third day, and ascended to reign on the throne of God. All has been accomplished. The work of salvation is done. And yet, the work continues. We still await the culmination of all things as we anticipate that day when truly all shall be well. So what do we do in the meantime? That's also a question that we ask in this season of the coronavirus. There's a register of services that all churches keep for the historical record. Every liturgy that we have is recorded in this book. Well, this morning, when I added today's date, it made for an entire page of nothing but entries with the note, "No public worship, coronavirus." Now, we had already filled up half a page with that notation, but seeing a complete page with that note is jarring, and there's no end in sight. Sure, we might start with some version of outdoor worship later this summer, but it is going to be a long time before we can again have 150 people back in this church and get to sing hymns together. So what do we do in the meantime? And as you've probably noticed, the meantime isn't perfect. From things as small as a paper cut, all the way up to things like environmental degradation, there are problems in this in-between time. And that suffering leads us to ask the question, if God is in charge and loving, then why do bad things happen? That question is the most challenging one there is. Theologians call it theodicy, the justice of God. Unsatisfactory responses to that question drive people away from faith and make the faithful uncertain of what they believe. So what do we do with the persistence of suffering and evil in the meantime? That's the question behind the parable that Jesus puts to us this morning. Last week, you'll remember, we had a very bad sower who just threw seeds around and by God's grace found an abundant harvest. This week, we at least have a farmer who knows how to plant seeds properly. The wheat has been planted and starts coming up. But when the laborers go out into the field, in that meantime between the planting and the harvesting, they notice that there are weeds growing up all around the wheat. It's a question of theodicy. If you, O Master, planted good seed, why are there bad weeds in this field? Now, personally, I find it to be a fascinating question, and it's also a profoundly practical one for me. When people come to me and ask why their loved one has cancer, why their children have disowned them, why their marriage is falling apart, why racism persists in our society, I want to do more than just shrug and say, well, I guess just the way it is. But if I'm honest, that's the best answer there is to suffering and evil. Last year, I was really interested in reading more about this, and so I read 6 books all in a row on the topic. And at the end of reading nearly 1,500 pages on this question, the best responses to suffering were not the ones that did all sorts of philosophical gymnastics to get around the problem. Instead, the most faithful responses were the ones that said, suffering is hard, but God is with us in that suffering, and one day the suffering will come to an end. Now, for people with a cross as our central symbol, that shouldn't be a surprising answer, even if it's not as descriptive as we might want it to be. Consider the master in Jesus' parable. All he says is an enemy has done this. That's it. No explanation of what the enemy was attempting to do or how this person came to be an enemy. Just a simple statement. An enemy has done this. When we encounter evil and suffering, sometimes that's the most that we can say. An enemy has done this. And as we know from St. Paul's writing, the final enemy is death. Death is what stands in the way of abundant life, and that's what we are left contending with in the meantime. So the servants ask a very reasonable question. Shall we pull up the weeds and get rid of them? Now, like the haphazard sower last week, we see what happens when the son of a carpenter starts using farming metaphors to teach a bunch of fishermen. Of course you pull the weeds that are growing. That's what would have been expected. But this farmer says no. Here we need to understand a bit about what's going on agriculturally. Wheat, even if we've never grown it or seen it, we're familiar with it. From wheat, we can make many wonderful things: bread, pasta, tortillas. This weed, though, is not the garden variety type. It's a particular weed that grows only in the Middle East. It's known as darnel. And what makes this weed so vile is that it looks almost identical to wheat. Pulling up all of the darnel would result in pulling a lot of wheat as well. And the roots of the darnel grow up around the roots of other plants. So even if you correctly identified all of the weeds, uprooting them would uproot the good plants as well. But if this harvest is going to be saved, the darnel must be dealt with because of a poisonous fungus that grows inside of it. It can ruin an entire crop of wheat if it gets mixed in. At the harvest time, though, the darnel is easy to spot because there aren't any grains on it. The fact that Jesus uses this type of weed for his parable tells us something about the difference between good and evil, namely, that it can be hard to tell the difference between them. Sure, we think that we can easily spot the difference, but it's trickier than we realize. Think about the situation that we're dealing with right now with schools. Do they reopen for in-person attendance, or do they remain online only? Neither is a great choice. Both have some good qualities and potentially catastrophic downsides. Many of the conversations around race are similar. There are some ideas that people put forth as solutions, and while they might do some good, there will be unintended consequences. As we heard St. Paul write a few weeks ago in the lectionary, "For I do not do the good that I want, but the evil I do not want is what I do. So I find it to be a law that when I want to do what is good, evil lies close at hand." That's how it is. This parable tells us that we ought not to fool ourselves into thinking that we can always tell the difference between good and evil. And even if we could, if we try to root out the evil, we will damage the good along with it. This, I acknowledge, is a very unsatisfying reality. I absolutely want to expunge injustice, poverty, racism, and selfishness, not only from myself, but from our entire society. But humility reminds me that I do not have the mind of God. I get ahead of myself if I put myself on God's throne and think that I know the difference between right and wrong. After all, the problems in Genesis all started when Adam and Eve ate from the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. The master says, Let both of them grow together until the harvest. And at harvest time, I will tell the reapers, collect the weeds first and bind them into bundles to be burned, but gather the wheat into my barn. Does this mean that we just let suffering and evil happen? That we don't address racism? That we don't seek medical treatment when we are ill? We just accept evil and do nothing about it, letting it choke out the roots of the good and steal nutrients from the crops of justice and peace? In our baptismal covenant, we commit ourselves to strive for justice and peace among all people and to persevere in resisting evil. But is Jesus saying that whenever we notice evil, we're supposed to just let it grow up alongside the good? If that's what this parable is saying, then I'm not sure that I can be on board with it. The issue with reading the Bible in translation is that sometimes we miss the punchline, and that's what's happening in this parable. Where we read in English, let both of them grow, the word there for let means so much more than permit or allow. No, it's the exact same word that Jesus taught the disciples to use when they pray back in the Sermon on the Mount in chapter 6 of Matthew. Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. Evil and suffering are to be forgiven, to be let go. In the kingdom, we invest our energy into a different sort of economy, an economy of grace, mercy, and forgiveness. Pulling up weeds is an act of violence and destruction. That's the currency that the enemy used by sowing those bad seeds. Jesus says returning evil for evil is not a sign of the kingdom. Now, ethically, there may be nothing wrong with resisting evil and pulling up those weeds. But we ought not to confuse or delude ourselves into believing that if we pull up those weeds, that we will bring salvation. Salvation comes through forgiveness, through resisting evil, through endurance, not through more violence. Pulling up those weeds will result in much damage. At least in the meantime, it seems that God is a pacifist, letting good and evil grow up together. Now, to be very clear, this parable ends with a separation of the good from the bad. The reckoning will come, and it will be done by the reapers, which we are not. And even in this, an abundant harvest comes. Instead of only a harvest of wheat, the farmer has a harvest of wheat, and of kindling for the fire that will be used to bake that wheat into bread, which will feed many. Perhaps having good and evil grow up together does not quench our desires for revenge, retribution, or reordering. But if God is patiently enduring, then we will be in good company if we do so as well. In Jesus' day, people were wondering. Jesus says he's ushering in the kingdom of heaven, but we still see evil all around us, so Jesus can't be right. Can he? The world then, like today, was one of might makes right, where strength and honor come from having seats of power, wealth, and prestige. And the way to get those things is to compete with others. In this parable, Jesus says that the kingdom comes not when we take matters into our own hands, not when we claim that we know how things should be done, not when we react hastily. Instead, the kingdom is a place where we patiently endure suffering because we trust that God will make all things well. The kingdom is a place where we can forgive rather than trying to get even, because we trust in the power of the cross. The kingdom is a place where we can humbly acknowledge that we do not have all of the answers, because we know that God is God, and we are not. This, I know, is not the most comforting message out there. The evil is to be tolerated instead of destroyed. But perhaps it is the most reassuring message there is. For all of our attempts to rid this world of evil and suffering, it persists. This parable tells us that is because it is not our job to eliminate these things from our world. Rather, our response to them is what matters more. In the face of evil, we witness to love. In the midst of suffering, we trust God. Now, this doesn't mean that we just ignore the evil, pretending that it's not there or add to it. But we ought not to fool ourselves into thinking that we have the capacity to rid this world of evil once and for all. We do, however, have the ability to fill this world with love as we wait in hope for God's harvest. And I'll tell you, there are a lot of people out there who probably think that I am a weed. And so I am incredibly thankful that this decision about who to keep and who to cancel is not for humanity to make. Instead, the God of grace will be the one to sort things out. And for that, I am eternally grateful. So in the meantime, we wait in hope and we grow in love. Let anyone with ears listen.